You're listening to the Fantrax Podcast Network. Fantasy sports entertainment lives here.
Hey guys, Manly Van Lee here. Just a quick reminder before we get into today's show that if you're not playing your fantasy sports on Fantrax, you're doing something wrong. Go ahead and check us out on Fantrax.com where you can create leagues 364 days a year. Wait, 365 days a year. I typed that up wrong. There's more than 364 in a year. This is live. I'm doing this right now, and I'm keeping that mistake in because it's at least funny and in tying with the standard tradition of our shows. Of course, along with the creating a league every day of the year, you can also open new seasons within days of the last game of a regular season. We've got a deeper player pool of any other platform. You can do multi-team trades, current and future draft pick tradings. Commissioner gets full control to handle leagues and team issues. It is amazing stuff. So if you're not playing on Fantrax, you're doing it wrong.
Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hard to return a monkey these days.
I'm going to have to do some more research on this to see exactly what these zombie raccoons are doing.
What good was the snow guy?
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Y'all don't understand. I never seen so many Dominican women with cinnamon tans.
You're Macaulay Culkin and you're just running around your house.
Don't tweet me if you drink the strawby. No strawby.
Zardoz.
Well, speaking of garbage, it's a Nasty Cast. All right, welcome into episode 156 of the Nasty Cast, everyone. I am Nathan Dokken. You can find me on the Twitter at Nathan Dokken, joined by a slightly under the weather, but his clothes have been recently changed, so he is very fresh. Ron Rigney. What up, Ron?
Yeah. I sound a lot still like a pile of flaming dog crap, but it's better than it was yesterday, and I'll save everybody the gory details, but it's been quite a start to my day. But yeah, I've never had this much mucus inside of my brain and my head ever, so it sucks.
Well, at least you're keeping the fluids inside of you at this point.
Yeah. There's nothing like getting a cold when it's 90 freaking degrees in almost June in Florida. It's great.
Yeah, that seems to be usually when I get sick, actually, is during the summer. I suppose because, you know, it's 30 below here in North Dakota in my igloo during the winter. So it's hard to find too much bacteria floating around.
That's true.
So, At least it keeps
very,
me healthy.
Very sterile environment.
Speaking of sterile, Van Lee, what's up?
I can't refute that claim because I don't have any kids. So
that's right, you don't.
I suppose that's a victory in your book. Yes, I'm here. We're recording this a little bit later, about a half hour later than we normally do, for two reasons. One, we have a guest, and I'm not going to blame it on him. Instead, I'm going to blame it on Ron because he was recording a different podcast. He cheated on us. So, in other words, I had to lie on my bed and fiddle around on Amazon for an extra half an hour. And I want to read to you some of the stupid crap that I purchased because you weren't ready to record when I was. And I'm not exaggerating. I purchased my own personal ping pong paddle that has its own ping pong paddle case. I bought a salt lamp. And I also bought a golf hat liner. I don't know what a golf hat is. I just assume it'll work for a regular hat. But these are three things that I spent money on that I worked hard to earn. That's your fault that I expect you to reimburse me for, Ron.
That's fine. We can write it off our taxes, I'm sure. I'm on Amazon today. I actually ordered some Dots Pretzels rub as well.
Nice. So. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yes.
I also ordered a bread maker the other day, and I'm excited to get that because I like bread and I want to make bread.
Yeah. We used to have a Zojirushi.
Ooh, fancy.
What is that? Is that a bread maker?
It was bread maker. I don't know if it was like a good one or not. We got it as a wedding gift.
Doesn't sound quite as enticing as a pizza pizzazz.
I had one of those years ago, and it worked. But
hell yeah.
It was also just this single-use tool that you couldn't do anything else with, and it took up like four square feet in the kitchen. So, and I got rid of that eventually. I just used the oven.
There you go. Let's see. Well, on this show, we do welcome Patrick Donovan from the Fantasy World Order podcast. So he will be joining us very shortly here. But tweet us the kitchen appliance that you want at NastyCastPod. You can find Patrick at PatrickFWO. I kind of want an air fryer. You guys have one of those?
I have one, and it's amazing. It's one of the best things
I've
ever
bought. Yeah, I'd like to get one, too.
Perfect for wings. I mean, phenomenal. They do such a good job. In fact, I'm glad you said that, because I'm going to probably eat wings after we're done with this then.
You said that word, and I just got immediately super hungry. So thanks for that. You could find Van, the hungry maker, at Manly Van Lee on Twitter. Ron is at The Real Made. You can wish him well. You can email us if you want to get a hold of us that way at nastytraxpods@gmail.com. That's T-R-A-X. And to support the show, there's a couple ways you can do that. You can rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen. That helps us out a lot. You can also donate to our Patreon at patreon.com/nastypod. And a couple perks that are coming your way if you do donate to us there. We have recently constructed a Slack channel there, so you will get the invite if you are a member of our Patreon, and you'll be able to Slack at us whenever you want, and so that will be fun. So I look forward to conversing with a handful of you who are donating, and thank you all very much for doing that. So it's just a little way of hopefully, you know, giving you a little bit more for your money, and we're also going to give out some free stickers, too. So
that's right. That's everyone loves stickers.
Yes.
I've never met a person who did not love a free sticker.
I will murder them personally. You tell me. Listeners, you tell me. If you find someone who doesn't love a sticker or you personally don't want a sticker, you better not say anything, because I will come to your house and murder you.
They deserve it. Also, if you can, if you want to listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, that is another terrific show that we do. It is Dynasty Baseball related as opposed to Redraft related, if you couldn't discern that from the title. On today's show, we have some promotions from the minor leagues that we're going to talk about. We got some ouchy toes. We got a trio of bullpens to talk about. We're going to play Nasties, Believe It or Not, by diving into the slumping ass cold Paul Goldschmidt. And all, as always, the mother tested, child approved waiver wire to round out the episode. So before we take a break and get on with Patrick, let's get our plugs out of the way. Ron, you want to kick us off here? Talk about the podcast that you just did and everything else you're working on.
Yeah, you catch me at Fantastics as always at on Twitter at The Real Made. Football wise, we just got done doing the tight end preview with Bob Long for Big Guy Fantasy Sports on the Consistency Podcast, and we'll be doing the we're taking this weekend off and then coming back after the big release of the Consistency Football Guide on June 1st. So we'll be back on June 3rd. Just kind of giving you an overview of what to expect with the book as far as, you know, what we got in there. We'll have Colby Conway on. Him and I kind of contribute a little bit of DFS stuff to the website, and our guy Josh Brickner that's contributing some Standard League articles there as well. So it'll be pretty big stuff there. And then, of course, the sophisticated Nasty Cast that we are on here now, and the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball podcast as well.
Ben?
Oh, you just want me to go? I wasn't paying attention. Yes, you can find my stuff on FantraxHQ.com. I wrote some stuff about people you could pick up and people who are performing. CJ Crone made an appearance, a guy who's actually hitting now that someone gave him playing time. Surprise, surprise. Mike Scioscia does that to someone else. Surprise. But real quick, I forgot to bring this up. I mean, I will forget to bring this up as we record the actual show. So why don't I bring it up now? Ben from Online, our Twitter follower and I believe Patreon donor, but I can't remember it. Either way, we love him, yep. Friend of the podcast. He asked a question on Twitter, and I said I would ask it. So I'm going to go ahead and ask it now. Assuming you are near the bottom. Oh, boy, my handwriting's bad. How soon press the panic button and make big moves in your fantasy seasons? In other words, how long would you stay the course with underperforming players? This is about the time. In my opinion, we're about a quarter of the way through the season. If you've got Paul Goldschmidt on your team, yeah, maybe stay the course a little bit longer with him. But if you've got, you know, 10th round players who are struggling a bit, now's the time to start making moves or making big moves. I think if you're in a dynasty, obviously your whole mentality is going to change and you're going to start. I mean, if you're in dead last and you've got 30 points in a 15-team league, you're not going to finish any higher than middle of the pack. So you might as well commit to rebuilding. But if you're, you know, in eighth place or whatever, you've still got an opportunity to grow. So you just have to evaluate where you're at in your league, how big it is, how many points you have, where you can make the gains. I was looking at a league of mine the other day, and in stolen bases, I'm actually in second place in this league. It's 15-team dynasty. In stolen bases, I'm middle of the pack, but there are like seven guys ahead of me within four stolen bases. So if I make a move for a guy right there, that can gain me a lot of points and hopefully get me in that first place position. So you just kind of have to do that. As far as, again, with underperforming players, now is the time to start really looking hard at them and seeing what you can do to change your team. Ron, you'll talk about that later on, maybe.
Sure. I think I could squeeze that in.
Okay, good, good.
Yeah,
it's definitely the time to reevaluate some of the real slumps. Like if you're looking at the back half of your roster, like you shouldn't be holding on to those guys too closely anyway. But yeah, some of the extreme guys that are just failures, you know, it's time to reevaluate everybody and shake up the roster. Don't do anything, you know, too extreme, you know, like you said with Paul Goldschmidt, obviously Anthony Rizzo, everybody expects him to bounce back. Those type of upper echelon guys, they're not, you know, don't cut them, don't go crazy, but the back half of your roster is definitely not too early to be reevaluating those guys based on what they've done to this point.
Oh, and I want to share a real quick piece of advice. Jeff Zimmerman on the Launch Angle podcast, which I'm also the host of, and came out to on Wednesday. Go listen to that. Mentions that really each week, you should be probably flipping one offensive player and one pitcher on your staff, your lowest member. And he thinks that's a really good way to just kind of even just luck into high-performing players. Because if you're dropping that worst guy on your staff who you know isn't going to change or who's your waiver wire fodder, you never know. You may strike gold. So that's definitely a good piece of advice just to kind of consider as you look into it.
And that is something that got me into trouble last year because I didn't do that. And, you know, we had a lot of those Launch Angle Revolution guys. Justin Smoke comes to mind as a guy, you know, people of that ilk who, you know, if you bought into them, then you enjoyed terrific seasons. Whereas I just sat on my hands. I didn't get to enjoy any of those guys because I'm like, we know who Justin Smoke is. He sucks. So you have to make sure that you're doing your due diligence, doing your homework on these guys. And that's a good way to, like you said, sort of luck into some extra statistics and perhaps some guys who are just on hot streaks who maybe it's actually legitimate. You're going to get them for the rest of the year. So as far as my plugs go, obviously this show, Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, all the usual stuff. Friday on Fantrax HQ, I've got my Fire and Ice performance evaluation. Saturday over on the Razzball, I've got the Double Dippers on my two-starter Palooza. Starting pitchers for the coming week. And then Sunday is my top 100 starting pitchers, which is always a fun time. So you can go check that out there. And that is all. So we're going to take a break here. Come back on the other side with Patrick Donovan from Fantasy World Order. Enjoy the show. All right. Joining us now on the Nastiest Cast out there. You know him from the Fantasy World Order podcast right here on the Fantrax Podcast Network. It's Patrick Donovan. Welcome to the Nasty Cast, Pat.
Hey guys, pleasure to be here. Thanks a lot for having me.
Yes, it is. It is only fair that we do a little two-step here, as you guys are bringing the great Van Lee onto your podcast allegedly next week. Great podcast. Everybody should check it out. Obviously, we highly recommend it. But the first question that I have for you, Pat, before we get into this baseball stuff, this is very important. People can find you on Twitter at PatrickFWO. But when they search for that, they will see a giant pink bunny. What the hell is going on there? What's that all about, man?
That's from a few years ago. If you look at the picture, you can see I've got an Eagle t-shirt on, Philadelphia Eagles. And that was during a dark phase in Eagle history. So for whatever reason, I was at the bar watching a game, and there was a giant bunny head there left from the night before. And I just went behind the bar and got it and just sat there because I think the Eagles were getting beat by about 3 touchdowns at that point. Not my best day.
Oh, man. Well, it made for a good picture.
On that, after hearing that story, I had initially, before realizing, of course, football, Philadelphia Eagles, I thought you meant just like a shirt with an eagle on it, like something you'd find at like Walmart for $4, you know, like the Three Howling Wolves type of t-shirt. And I was really impressed for a brief moment.
Yeah, a giant eagle with America below it.
Exactly.
America.
The only problem with that is it really interferes with the drinking. That's why.
I think I'd had enough of that at that point.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, man, let's get into the news here. We had a surprising amount of good news this week. It seems like it's always injuries that we're talking about here, but we instead had a lot of call-ups this past week, so this is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to start off with the big one. Juan Soto, insanely, has gotten the promotion to the Nationals. He played just 39 games in the minor leagues, from low A to high A to double A, and the Nats told him F-triple-A. We're going to get you up into this dugout right here. He had a 12-18 OPS with 14 bombs and 29 strikeouts to 28 walks. Just insane. Just 19 years old. So obviously a lot of fab being thrown out, nearly half the budgets for some people in some leagues. Pat, did you get him anywhere? And what are you expecting from him overall this year?
I did not get him anywhere. I threw out a bid pretty much, I was right around 40-45% across the board, and that didn't seem to get it done. It's always seemed as though he was going for about 60%. Before I get too deep into it, though, is Juan an official pronunciation, or is it?
That's the North Dakotan pronunciation. He just kind of
Juan.
Juan. I like that. So
yeah, you really got to enunciate it properly. Y'all don't know how to talk. Juan.
I mean, to me, he's looked really good thus far. Obviously, it's a small sample, but I mean, he's got the sort of profile where he's got the rare combination of power and average that's exceedingly rare in today's game. I mean, you can find 30 homers anywhere, but normally it comes with the 250 average. This is a guy that's got a shot to hit 280, 290 with 25, 30 homer pop over the course of a full season. My big concern with him, though, is that he's so inexperienced and he hasn't seen advanced pitching. So while he has looked good in a brief sample, he struck out twice today, but I mean, you know, you can't take anything from, you know, three games or four games, but it's just, to me, I worry that he might not be seeing or have seen the quality of pitching that he's going to see at this level. And as a result, he might struggle. And struggle is relative. I mean, the zip slash line is absolutely insane. It has him as a 290 hitter with an 840 OPS. I think that is extremely generous. I see him more as like a 20 homer bat rest of the way, right around 270, which is still a very useful piece, particularly in deeper leagues. But, you know, I just think that maybe we need to keep our expectations a little bit in line, given the fact that he is so young and given the fact that he doesn't have, you know, quite the resume of experience at the upper levels that some prospects do.
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head there, too. And for me, I got him. I actually have him in one dynasty. I actually am lucky enough to have him and Acuna in one dynasty, so I'm pretty excited about that.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes, sir. And then the other one I was able to throw out, it took me 50% of my fab budget, and I got laughed at in my league, which I don't really care because I'm at a point where I've got to either get off the pot as far as what I'm doing. And so I got to, you know, get rid of some fab money and get some guys on my team, which, by the way, a guy that we'll talk about a little bit later on in that same round of bidding, I did add Tyler O'Neill for a solid dollar in that league as well. So I think that kind of offset that a little bit. But when you throw that money at a 19-year-old, 20-year-old guy, you know, coming up from Double A, you have to kind of like what you said, Pat. You have to expect there's going to be the growing pains. You know, Ronald Acuna, you know, he's been solid for the most part, but you know, he's going to have days where he's going to be 0-for-4 like Soto was today. But what I will say is, you know, as much as we like to see the bomb when he first came up, I was almost more excited to see, and this is kind of the baseball nerdiness in all of us that, you know, that do this, is the three walks yesterday that he had. I think that, you know, he had an interesting stat line where he was 1-for-1 with three walks. And so I think that's pretty interesting. And I like that. I like the fact that he's, you know, he's showing a little bit of that discipline, but he is going to have the growing pains. And, you know, you got to take the risk too that he might get sent down as well and get called back up. But I would hope that they would keep him up and let him just kind of figure things out. But I, you know, he is fun to watch. You know, he is in kind of that same breath as Acuna. You know, he's risen up quite a bit, and you know, it just kind of puts more pressure on the Jays for calling up Vladdy Jr. to be the next one that we can get excited about.
A couple things I want to point out here. First off, when we talk about the fab budget needed to pick him up, we're going to talk about, you know, 50% of your budget plus. And the thing about that is that you need to realize that most of your fab acquisitions, your goal is to get the most impact out of them. And what better impact can you get than a player like this? Like, we're all talking about Vlad, I know it could be tomorrow that he gets called up. We don't know. But guess what? Calling Juan Soto up wasn't the quote-unquote smart decision, and it's still a surprise to all of us. So calling up Vlad would be a similar ordeal. So I can't bank on him getting called up. And if it takes him another couple of months, if I put 50% of my budget towards that, that's a couple of months less production than I would have gotten out of Soto now. Now, the other thing I want to point out is that Bryce Harper still holds, I believe it's the National League record for a teenager in home runs, and he hit 22 in 2012 as a 19-year-old. So based on Juan Soto's pace, which is, 10 homers in 115 plate appearances, he's on a 50-homer pace, he should be able to shatter that record. I don't necessarily know if that happens, obviously. And we also have the newfound era of everyone hitting home runs to contend with. But I really think that's an easily attainable thing for him to do. I think he can hit 26 home runs easily and just blow that record out of the water, which is amazing. I mean, a 19-year-old to do that is just simply crazy. And I do want to point out that I believe I got him in the listener league, where I picked him up because we don't have a fab budget. We just have ads and drops, and I got a hold of him because I was up late that night.
Oh, Festus Finger, huh?
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, I got him in one of my, like you said, Festus Finger leagues, of which I am in two, which is just terrible. I hate those leagues. But I did manage to get him in one. And the other one, I couldn't get him in because I was out of moves. Apparently, there's a streaming limit every week in that league. So that pissed me off. So I could have got Soto in another league, and I was just unavailable. So that go figure. But, Van, I can't believe that you brought up the Bryce Harper's rookie year, because I was going to say the exact same things. I actually had already brought up Bryce Harper's page just to quote his rookie numbers. So I'm totally in lockstep with you there. And like you said, with the juice balls, 22 home runs, I think he can better that. A 270 average, that's attainable. The playing time looks good. Adam Eaton is not coming back anytime soon. Victor Robles, maybe he's done for the year. I'm not exactly sure what that timetable is, but Michael Taylor, he's okay. it's the playing time is there. As long as he hits, he's going to stay up there. And so, yeah, that fab could very well be worth it. Obviously, he's looking like a generational talent right now. Three walks and three strikeouts so far. Not looking terribly overmatched. He's actually only got a 40% zone rating. So pitchers have been pretty careful with him already in the early going. So very promising. So we'll move on then to Austin Meadows, who a little bit more expectedly got the call to the Pirates. And 32 games at AAA, he hit 304, I think is what it's supposed to be. 336, 397. So not much power there, but a lot of batting average, just one bomb, but eight stolen bases. So now he's up with the Pirates with Starling Marte out. So, Pat, what are you expecting from Austin Meadows?
I think that he's a safe sort of prospect. I think that he has become almost somewhat underrated because the production has been light in the last few years, and that's mostly as a result of injury. I see him as like a 15 homer, 25 steal type that's going to hit around 275, which is a pretty safe floor, especially in today's game. He's also off to a great start in the majors. He's got two bombs, so he's already doubled his total from the minor leagues. He homered again last night. I don't think he's worth the investment that Soto is. I don't think he's some sort of generational talent. And he's also blocked when Marte comes back. So I imagine he's back to the minors at that point. So I think that Meadows is a player that you don't want to expend too much fab on unless you have an ability to stash him with a minor league spot or an NA spot or whatever the mechanism is for stashing a minor league player, because he's destined to end up back there when Marte gets back. If I have that capability, I might throw 5 to 10% if I need some speed and I'm hoping that he gets the call again later in the year and finds his way into the playing time.
Yeah, one of the things that stuck out for me was I thought he was a lot older than what he was. He's another one of these prospects that seems like they've been around forever, and that I was thinking he was maybe about 25 years old, but he is only 23, so still fairly young. But yeah, and Pat, you said it too. It's a question of where is he going to play when their outfield is fully healthy, and there's really not anywhere for him to play. And I don't think he's more of an impact guy than any of the three that they have there already. in Marte Polanco, and then our guy C Dick there. So I think that, you know, like you said, he's going to get sent back down. I'd like to see him walk. You know, he's only walking 5% at AAA. I like, and he has yet to take a walk in four games. And I don't know if the power is really real. I mean, he hasn't hit above 7 homers at any level. And so I don't know necessarily what the power is going to bring. He is going to steal you a few bases, though. So I don't have him anywhere just because I don't have anywhere to stash him. But, you know, you, in a deeper league, I think he's definitely a good stash and get what you can out of him now. But I wouldn't spend a whole lot of fab on him because I do think, you know, like you said, Patty is going to get sent down.
I think you guys kind of hit on a lot of the topics I wanted to cover. And you pretty much said it right there, Ron, with I don't know if the power's for real. And the thing about that is we have mentioned it's this era of the home run. So we've seen a lot of these prospects come up who don't hit home runs suddenly do. So there's entirely the chance that that could occur, but I can't bank on that. However, I'm not picking up Austin Meadows for power. I'm picking up for steals, and I think he's a potential elite base stealer. I think he could, I don't know, do early career Starling Marte and hit 10 home runs and steal 30 to 40 bases if he got full season at bats. Obviously, you're not going to get that this year. Playing time is going to be an issue, but I also do really like him. I picked him up in the Great Fantasy Invitational because my outfield is a hot mess and I could use the at bats right now, and I'll probably be able to stash him when he goes back down. So I'm happy to have gotten him in that regard, but I'm also kind of wary of what the results might end up being. Now, I'm optimistic and hopeful, but I don't necessarily know if it actually pans out the way I want it to.
Yeah, we'll be talking about a certain stolen base wunderkind that is going to be out for a certain period of time in a little bit. So maybe Austin Meadows will be a nice ad for you there if you're looking for some steals. But yeah, you got to keep in mind, too, this guy has been injured just constantly year after year. So in addition to the lack of playing time when Marte is back, you know, he might find himself on the disabled list at some point as well. So definitely I'm not looking at him as far as a long term option at this point. But our next call up, the Rays, Ron's Rays. Hey, Willy Adames. They called him up. That shocked me, to be honest. It might be a brief call, but he was hitting .311, .387, .466. He had 4 homers and 3 bags in the minor leagues before his call-up. So any more interest, Pat, for you with Willy Adames than Austin Meadows?
Not really, because I think they're sort of similar in terms of their outlook. The Rays came right out yesterday and immediately poured cold water on this situation and said he's only up for a couple of days. Joey Wendell's going on paternity leave. When he gets back, Adames will be sent back down. So, I mean, this is an even shorter window than we're dealing with Meadows. And Adames, I think, is going to be a better real-life player than he's going to be a fantasy player. He looks to be a player that's going to hit 15, 20 homers over the course of a full season, swipe 10 to 15 bags, and hit for a solid average. So you don't have that sort of explosive profile that Soto offers you. You don't have the sort of upside for the elite speed that Van mentioned with Meadows. He's more of a 2010, 2015 type of player in my eyes. Again, you know, minimal fab investment, I'm okay. If you need the help in the middle infield and you're hoping that he gets the call before long, which he should. I mean, he spent almost 2 full years now at AAA. So it's time for him to get the call, certainly. And I can't imagine they're going to keep him down there, you know, much past the All-Star break this year. It's time for him to come up, and it's time to see what he can do at the major league level. But, you know, again, you have to have the method of stashing him. And I think you have to have the need in the middle infield, because if you don't have that, there's no real reason in picking him up and wasting the fab.
Yeah, I agree. You know, as a Rays fan, I think he fits perfectly with the kind of players that they like to have. They like to bring up the middle infield guys that can play a few different spots, possibly. I don't know how much they're going to move him around, though, from where he's playing now at short. But it was cool to see him hit the homer off Chris Sale in his first game up, but it wasn't cool the fact that he struck out the other 3 times. And so, you know, he's going to have solid hit tool, but I don't know if there's going to be all that much power there, like you said, 15 to 20 homer upside. I think he's going to hit for a decent average no matter what where he's playing, what he does. But it just kind of sucks as a Rays fan to see him up. You know, he's been kind of toiling around down there in the minors because he's with Honeywell out for the year. He's kind of our top guy left over, and it was nice to see him called up, like see him up for the long term. But it makes sense though because they just don't have room for him. with the different guys that they have on the roster. So it's cool to see him come up, but I'd like to see him come up for the long term. But he'll definitely be up another point in 2018 because, Pat, like you said, he's been in AAA forever, it seems like.
I'm kind of sad that you're not feeling well, Ron, because I really expected to get a good Ron Rigney rant, triple R, out of that, just because of your recent texts to Nate and I about how angry you've been about why they might send him back down, but which I completely agree with. Analysis-wise, he's Nick Gordon to me. He's a guy who's going to hit four decent average, get on base a decent amount, hit 15 homers, steal 15 bases. It's not exciting, but it's worthwhile to have on your fantasy team. So I like him. It'll be great when he gets called up. I just don't know when that will happen just because this is the Rays we're talking about.
Yeah, so I'm when I first put in my fab bid for him in the podcast league, I just emptied my fab because I only had $22 left, and the initial reports, I didn't know we're only going to be just like he's going to be up for like three freaking days or three games or whatever. So yeah, $22 on him, and it was a total waste because I knew that. You know, later on, I was texting with you guys, Ron Van. And so I knew that he was only going to be up for a short time, and I just forgot to go back and change my bid. So now I'm stuck with him. So now I am just going to stash him just out of spite. So the freaking Rays better call him back up in a hurry.
This is just when I picked up Austin Slater for $21 last year. I meant to bid $2, and instead I ended up getting Slater. I'm like, fine, I'm just going to play him. And then he got hurt, and I got a reason to cut him or whatever it was. But yep.
Or Aroldis Chapman going for $199 in the auction or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, another one of those guys, maybe the power plays up a little bit more than we expect with the juice balls. And then playing in the AL East, obviously the trap doesn't help, but a lot of road parks there that will help him hit. But we'll probably talk about him more a little bit more in the season because we are definitely under the assumption that he's not going to stick around too long.
Also, by the way, real quick, on the rundown, you wrote his name down as Wiley Adams. That's my favorite part about this.
I wish that was his name.
Not Willie Adames, Wiley Adams, which is it's his name now. I'm just gonna call him that. I need to write this down again.
It sounds like a teeny bopper like pop star.
it might be.
I was going with like a southern man who's for some reason panning for gold like in the Mississippi River, and he starts every sentence with like whoop, and then he like spits out some dip. Because he's always chewing, but yep, well, my name's Willie Adams.
Why, that's old Wiley Adams down there at the pond trying to get some nice gold.
What? That's Wiley Adams down there washing that there comforter to try to clean it out there, man.
Look at the size of his tub.
How do I transition from dirty tubs to D. Gordon? I don't know. You could hurt your toe in the tub, I suppose, like D. Gordon did. He fractured his toe. He was second in baseball with 16 stolen bases, trailing behind only Ender Inciarte, who has 18. Where did that come from?
Yeah, that just makes me angry that he's that good at stolen bases. I traded him away in the offseason because I'm like, yeah, he's pretty good, but I don't think he's ever going to be an elite-level talent with that. And then suddenly he's like, no, I steal bases every freaking day. Just makes me angry. Go on. I'm sorry.
I have him everywhere. I totally saw it coming. So,
rub it in. So anyway, Gordon's been apparently playing through this injury since May 9th, and it just wasn't working out. So, Pat, what are you doing in the wake of this D. Gordon injury?
You know, we talked about this last night when we recorded it on the Fantasy World Order podcast, and I sort of had a different take than my other two co-hosts, and I look at this as though you've banked the 16 steals from Gordon already. And the time frame on his return has sort of been, there's been mixed reports. I've heard out until the All-Star break. I've heard he's not expected to be out that long at all. If you take the point of view that he'll be out about a month, which is sort of the middle ground there, and then you give him the rest of the season and you assume he can run at the same pace, which there's a lot of assumptions there, but let's just say he does. You're looking at about a 48 steal season. I don't know that you're going to need to strictly replace him with speed if that's the production that you expect going forward. I think the better path, rather than expending other assets that you're banking on to make up other categories to get a speedster to replace him, I think the better way to go about it is to find a middle infielder that's going to hit for a high average, that's going to score some runs. And he's going to, what you're going to end up doing over the course of however long Gordon is out is you're going to turn an asset that was a 3-homer, 60 steal, 300 hitter into hopefully like a 7 or 8 home run hitter with 50 steals and a 290 average. And hopefully about the runs will be about the same. And there are plenty of middle infield assets that are readily available, particularly in 12-team mixers. But even in deeper formats, these guys are not going to be that expensive. Astrul Cabrera is one that's off to a fantastic start for the Mets. And he is playing every day, and he's hitting second in that lineup. Eduardo Escobar for the Twins is hitting in the middle of a very good lineup. He's got some pop. And Dustin Pedroia is coming back. And, you know, I mean, he's on every 12-team waiver wire that every league I'm in, he's on the waiver wire and available. So, I mean, you can pick him up, bank his 290, hopefully, a few homers, good counting stats in that Boston lineup, and then hopefully Gordon comes back and picks up where he left off rather than expending, you know, the guy that you took to replace Gordon's power. The name that immediately comes to mind is Chris Davis. Obviously, he's hurt as well. But you know, I don't think you can cut off your nose to spite your face because of this injury. And I think a lot of people are going to do that by trying to go out and get another speed asset, which of course is going to be expensive.
Yeah, and you kind of made the argument for me. You're simply not going to replace the stolen bases. It's going to be difficult to do, especially if you're trying to do it through waivers. It can't be done. But the thing about D. Gordon as well is he's, you know, can't forget he's hitting .304 and he scored 25 times. So he's helping you in a couple other places also. And you know, the one thing that I was excited about as well, which he should be back in time, I think, to still get this, is he got moved back to second base with all the Robinson Cano stuff. And so the leagues that I have him in, not to say that his skill set and his stats aren't valuable as an outfielder, but I value them way more as a second baseman than I do a center fielder. And so hopefully he'll be back in time, which I think he will, with the 80-game suspension for Cano, to play enough games to get that eligibility going into leagues next year. But yeah, you're going to have to just kind of, and we talked about this before, you know, trying to replace these guys that excel in one category, especially stolen bases, because they're hard to come by. You're not going to get it. So, you know, Pat, like you said, you find a guy that you can plug in that middle infield that's going to be able to give you a couple of things and just kind of capitalize on that until you can get D. Gordon back.
And you guys pretty much made the arguments there. Just a couple more names I want to give you if you're looking for an outfielder. I just kind of scoured a couple of the leagues I'm in that fit the 12 to 15 team mold, more closer to 15 team. Tyler Austin, I see available just everywhere, and he's a guy who's hitting, and he's hitting in the Yankees lineup, so he's going to score a lot of runs and drive in a lot. So that's a guy I like. He's eligible at first base, outfield, all over the place. Jacoby Jones of the Tigers, he's the slash line isn't great, 238, 285, 395, but he's hit 3 homers, stolen 5 bases, 18 runs, 10 RBIs, decent stats there. And Daniel Descalzo, who plays all over the place as well and has played really well, is another guy that I could see at least giving you some sort of decent value that's going to be available on your waiver wire. So these are just a couple of names I wanted to throw out for people to look at just if they, you know, want to pick up a guy to replace some stuff, because you're not going to replace the stolen bases. So I wouldn't even necessarily attempt it. I would just look for somebody who's going to get you something in the meantime. Perhaps even a Wiley Adams might be available on your waiver wire as well. And if he comes back up soon, there you go.
Yep. Down here panning for gold. Don't mind me none.
We're going to talk about some more waiver wire guys later, but yeah, I was looking for like stolen base guys, and it's ugly. You're pretty much just getting the steals and everything else sucks. Like guys like Jared Dyson and Adam Engel, pretty ugly. So hopefully,
well, which on a side note real quick though, Dyson could be a decent play because of Steven Souza going back on the DL as well. So that could be, yeah, everything else does kind of suck, but he might get a few more at-bats than he normally would.
Right, yeah, and just 19% owned on the Fantrax. So with that, we're going to take a quick break here, come back with some bullpens. Welcome back to the Nasty Cast. We are going to discuss some bullpens that are a little bit tumultuous right now. We got a trio of them that are a little bit on fire, a little in fuego, a little smolder at least, maybe a little bit of smoke. So we're going to start with the Phillies. It's been a little bit of a murky situation out there. Are you sticking with Neris, Pat, or are you looking for some handcuffs here with that Phillies bullpen?
Well, Neris got the last opportunity, but Dominguez and Ramos have considerably better results. I think the job ultimately goes to Neris, but I don't even know if I want to chase these saves. I don't think there's a clear answer. Again, my best case is Neris, but this seems like the prime location for an outside closer to come in within the next 6 weeks and move everyone down a rung, sort of like the Angels. You know, if you really want to speculate, I think Dominguez is second. And that's only if you're really desperate and you need to try to get the saves and you need to speculate. But at the end of the day, I think whatever ends up happening here, it's going to be a completely different situation in about 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's a good take on that. That's one I hadn't thought of, but that is a prime situation for somebody to be brought in from the outside, you know, depending upon who that is. But when I look down the list, you know, Neris is the guy that's got the experience. But when you look at the stuff of Ramos and Dominguez, those guys are filthy. And if you play in a holds league, man, you need to go get these guys right now. But I think Dominguez's stuff profiles a little bit better just because the fastball is a little bit higher up on the velocity scale there. It's hitting 98, 99, the average 98.7, and so I think he might be the guy that profiles the best within what they have. But I agree with you there. It's one where I think that, you know, especially if they feel like they can make a run at it, which I think they can, they're going to go shopping for something elsewhere.
Not much to add. Neris, I think, gets the next couple of opportunities, but he's bad. I think somebody takes it over, but it's really difficult to speculate on who that may be. I don't know who leads the Phillies in saves at the end of the season, whereas with the next team we're going to talk about, I'm pretty confident. So with this one, I'll go Neris, Dominguez, Ramos as far as my hierarchy. However, I'm 15% confident that's the way it goes for even a month from now, nonetheless, the rest of the season.
Did all three of you guys go without saying the first names Sir Anthony Dominguez and Edibre Ramos?
That is a
damn shame.
Travesty.
That is an 80 grade name on Sir Anthony.
We're saving that for you because you're our names guy.
Yeah,
but what about Pat Neshek?
Yeah, that's a good name.
I prefer Nate Jones myself, but I actually think that, you know, these guys, as far as handcuffs go, at least they're good. So they can help you in ratios, you know. So as far as you're just looking to handcuff and potentially come into some saves, I think you could do worse. I would probably roster Sir Anthony over Edibre just because his name is freaking awesome and that would make me happy. But otherwise, yeah, I don't really have any clarity there. I do think that Neris holds on to that job for a little bit longer. Let's move on to the Braves, where Rodas Vizcaino has been a little bit shaky. Pat, are you doing any handcuffing here?
Yeah, I actually think I'm more apt to handcuff here because I think the relievers the Braves have behind Vizcaino are a little bit better than what the Phillies are offering. And I'm talking about Winkler and Minter. You know, I think that they're ratio assets. We know what Minter is capable of. I know that he got off to a somewhat slow start to begin the year, but I think he's beginning to rebound. Winkler has been outstanding out of nowhere. If I was to place a bet in terms of speculation on who might be behind Vizcaino, I think it's Winkler. But again, I think that this is another situation where I could see somebody from the outside come in. I think it's less likely here than it is in Philadelphia, just because I think the Phillies are a little more real than the Braves. But this, again, is a bullpen primed for an addition if the Braves continue to win. I mean, they've called up Acuna. There's Austin Riley lurking. There's been some speculation that they might be tied to Mike Moustakas if they continue to win. So, again, this could be a situation where you might not want to rely on this situation for saves because it could be volatile going forward.
Speaking of the Braves, boy, that Joey Bats experiment worked out well, didn't it?
Sure did. And then the Mets are like, oh, I want some of that. Give me
that. We'll take it. Yeah, right?
Garbage? Please.
Yeah. We'd love to have some trash here.
Send it out here to New York. We'll take it.
Hey, we take him over here. Hey, we got it. We need him over here. Yeah, I didn't understand that when they did it. I don't understand why they called him up, and I don't understand why he was let go so soon. But anyway, we'll get back to the bullpen here. I think Minter's probably my favorite guy, and I think long-term, you know, he's the guy I think that they want to kind of groom into that. I would like to see a few less walks, though. That's kind of the one knock on his game. He has been in a couple save opportunities. He does have two on the season. And so Winkler has, I mean, I'm looking at his stats here, and I wasn't able to get him in a lot of places, but he's impressive. 119 average against, but he's the guy right now that I think if Vizcaino struggles, that he's probably going to be the next in line just because of how dominant he's been. But overall, for the long term, I think I'll give a little bit of a nod to AJ Minter. But either one of those guys, as far as a handcuff, as far as a ratio guy, as far as a holds guy, if you can go get either one, I think you're doing yourself a favor.
I'm in all of my leagues going hard after Dan Winkler. I think he's going to be the guy, and I think he's going to – well, let me back up a bit. I think Vizcaino has struggled a bit, but I don't think it's been as bad as a lot of people think. So I think there's also an opportunity or a chance that he holds onto the job for a bit longer. However, they've already mentioned that they're going to the committee. So I think if we're truly in that mindset of it's up for grabs, I'm with Winkler 100%. And I'm picking up everywhere I can because his stuff is lights out. He's a 28-year-old reliever. And that's, you know, for some of these guys who basically finally figured out, that's about the right age, particularly for a reliever. You know, I think of, say, Andrew Miller, you know, somebody like that who, as they're an older player, they just figured out and it works. So I'm all in on that. Minter, I don't like just because he walks everyone. And there are too many people. The starter, Sean Newcomb, formerly of the Angels, I do not understand how he is succeeding in walking like 5 per 9. It's absurd to me, and I don't think it's going to last. And I feel the same way with Minter. However, he's been better lately, but I still just do not believe you can walk 5 batters an inning, even in a relief capacity, and succeed. So I'm all about Dan Winkler. He's the only guy in that bullpen that isn't walking batters but is also striking them out. So he's definitely my best handcuff on this list. Of all the guys we're going to talk about, he's the guy I like the most.
Hey! Is he the son of Henry Winkler?
He could be.
The Fonz?
Maybe.
Is he the brother of Jesse Blinkler? No?
If he is, I'm trading for him in all of my leagues. Yeah, he's kind of came out of nowhere, right? AJ Minter was the one getting all the buzz in the offseason, and he started off really bad. Like, I don't remember how many innings he pitched without striking anybody out. It was really weird. And like you said, Ben, he's been better. But yeah, Dan Winkler coming out of nowhere, and his numbers are ridiculous. Over 20 innings he's pitched, 10% hard contact rate. I don't know if I've ever seen that. That's absurd. So yeah, you should get him everywhere. And he was flying under my radar until I was looking for some waiver wire guys to talk about, and he was on, you know, one of the most added guys. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? So yeah, definitely need to talk about him. Go pick him up if you can. But our third and final bullpen, unfortunately, is the Reds. The closer, Raisel Iglesias, whose name escaped me for a minute there. He is on the DL with biceps. Something wrong with his biceps. Anyway, it's not good. He's on the DL. So, Pat, we'll throw it to you here. Who do you think gets the most saves in the interim until Iglesias can return?
Okay, so just a note on Iglesias before I get to who I think is going to take the job while he's out. The reports are that the biceps injury are to his non-throwing arm, which, of course, is key because he's more likely to get back quick because it's not his throwing arm. As of tonight, they're in a 4-4 game currently, and it's the top of the ninth that Jared Hughes is in. And I believe he got through it clean. So I think that's our immediate answer, is that Jared Hughes is the guy that would be the closer, because that's a traditional closer spot. Michael Lorenzen just came back off the DL. I know they like him a lot, but I got to imagine that Hughes is going to get the first save op, being that he pitched in the first closing opportunity that became available. And he's been very good this year. He got 1.74 ERA. Skills don't, I believe, match that, but he's a veteran reliever. I don't know that you should be chasing saves in Cincinnati anyway. You know, I think I'd rather have the Braves secondary guys. I think I'd rather have the Philly secondary guys than pick up Jared Hughes. But if you're desperate, I think that he's the guy.
Yeah, it's not as clear-cut when you look at the guys behind the closer in this bullpen as it was the Braves' bullpen. Another guy, too, there that I'd like to maybe see get a shot at this, just see what he can do, is Amir Garrett. He's a guy that I picked up in a couple of leagues for some ratio help. You know, the one thing that sucks for me, with the only place I have Raisel Iglesias is a weekly transaction league, so I'm without one of my closers for the duration of the week, so that kind of sucks. But, yeah, Jared Hughes is in there, and I think you're right, Pat. I think he did make it through the inning. They're tied up, so he didn't get a save opportunity, but he, you know, kind of a high pressure situation there, and he did okay. So I would say Hughes now, but I wouldn't sleep on Amir Garrett either. You know, with the 194 batting average against, he's got 31 Ks in 27 innings, and we saw flashes of it. If, you know, when he was up as a starter, posted a few nice outings as well. I don't know why they haven't given him more opportunities to come back up with the big club until now, but he's a guy that I'd add in a few places if you can.
The only thing with Garrett, though, is I wonder if they're eager to give him save ops because, he's pre-arb. So Hughes is their cheap veteran option. Mm-hmm. Garrett might be, they might be exposing themselves down the line if they start to give Garrett saves.
Good call.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Garrett. I wanted to talk about him. I don't think he gets saves. That's a good point. I didn't think about the arbitration. But I also don't think he gets saves because he's kind of doing the Archie Bradley thing where they're using him for extended outings. If they need two innings here, they'll do it. So I think he's more of that type of pitcher. So they're less likely to use him in the closing role. And all signs to me point to Jared Hughes. He's the guy who warms up, and he's the guy who they put in tonight. So he's the guy who's going to get the saves until Iglesias comes back, which I do not know how long he's going to be out, and I couldn't see any really good estimates. So that'll be just something worth monitoring because this could be, I don't know, if it's biceps on the left arm, if it's just tendonitis or tenderness or soreness. I mean, it could be just a 10-day stay, or it could be a month-long stay. We don't know. So it's worth checking out and seeing just before you spend too much on, say, Jared Hughes.
I actually picked up Hughes in my two fastest finger leagues, as they say. I guess I am desperate. Saves is saves. And, yeah, I do think that, you know, that fits the narrative of the veteran who they don't have to worry about paying saves out in arbitration, just slotting in there for the time being and keeping Garrett for later opportunities. That's kind of, you know, what you're seeing across some other teams, like what the White Sox were doing with Joaquin Soria until they pulled the plug on him. And, a couple other clubs that are doing that. So I'm in lockstep with Hughes for the time being, although not overly enthused with his ratios that he will give you in the strikeouts necessarily, but saves is saves, so you got to chase them. So with that, let's wrap up our bullpens. We're going to move on to Nasties, Believe It or Not. So the topic of debate here is going to be Paul Goldschmidt, and as of this recording, he actually homered today, and his average is sitting right at 200 with an on base of 324 and a slug of 371. So Pat, believe it or not, Paul Goldschmidt is not a top 10 first baseman the rest of the way. What do you think?
I do not believe that statement. Goldschmidt's obviously the talk of the fantasy world right now, and it's not in a good way. I want to leave with this because I've seen several analysts claiming it's an extension of last year. Well, let's actually wind the clocks back. Let's go back 1 year, courtesy of Greg Hewitt on Twitter. Last 365 days, Goldschmidt, 31 homers, 9 steals, 265, 366, 500 triple slash. That's still really good and really valuable and includes all the crap from this season. And with respect to this year specifically, I think there's a couple of things at play. The home struggles with the humidor, I think there might be a little bit of a David Wright City Field thing going on. I think the park is in his head a little bit. The exit velocity is down. The contact is down. But he's had stretches where both have been down before. I think he's pressing. Honestly, you know, homer today aside, I still think he needs a couple of games just to get his head straight. This is a slump, and I think it's turning into a mental issue. But, I mean, there are still encouraging signs here. The hard contact is really good. The line drives are still at a really high level. It just so happens that when he's making hard contact, it's finding gloves, which is what happens when you're in a slump. You know, rest of season projection, I pace him out at like 20 homers. I'll give him 10, 12 steals and about a 280, 285 average. So I'm expecting a bounce back, just probably not to the level that people were hoping for when they drafted him. You know, I'm a big fan of Goldschmidt. I think he's going to get it figured out. The humidor does concern me, and the fact that he's struggling so badly in that park while we're seeing other hitters do pretty well. I mean, AJ Pollock was exploding with power before he got hurt. So I do think it's a little mental at this point, but I expect him to turn it around. And to the point about first base, first base is nothing special this year outside of Freddie Freeman. So I don't know that he's got to be Paul Goldschmidt of old to finish top 10 from here on out.
Yeah, and I looked up, you know, where the preseason had everybody ranked as far as first base. Of course, Paul Goldschmidt was the top guy. But for him to finish, you know, based upon what the preseason ranks had these guys laid out as, he would have to be preseason had Eric Hosmer at 10, Will Myers at 9, Rhys Hoskins at 8, had Miguel Cabrera at 11. So I think it's a pretty safe bet he's going to finish as a top 10 guy. And one of the things, too, that I think is hurting him a lot as well is there's not a lot around him in that lineup. You know, with Pollock out, J.D. Martinez isn't there anymore. You know, so he's not got a lot of guys around him that are taking the pressure off him as well. And so I think it kind of feeds into what you said, Pat. It could be a mental thing because maybe he feels like he's the only guy there that can get it done. On a side note, though, I think he's a prime buy low candidate if you can get him for the right price. Some of the things, you know, some of the Facebook pages I'm on, some of the offers that I've seen people throwing out there for Goldschmidt that are actually landing him are insane. So I think he's a guy that, you know, if you can go out there and package a couple of decent mid-level players and get him, I think it's something definitely worth looking at. I was able to get him in that same league that I threw the money out for Soto, just because I have to, you know, I have to kind of take some gambles on some of these guys because you're not, you know, I have some guys as well that are underperforming, and so I'm trying to kind of kickstart my team a little bit. And, you know, it's a guy that he could post you some decent stats the rest of the way out, but I think top 10 is a very easy finish for him once the season's over.
So you're saying that maybe if you're, you know, in 13th place in a dynasty league, you should trade your 5 top best prospects for him? Is that what you're suggesting, Ron?
That's exactly not what I'm saying at all. I would not do that. So, yeah, no. And if you're just hypothetically, if you're an owner out there in a league, you know, maybe on Fantrax, don't offer those offers. They're not going to get you anywhere.
It's just not going to work. Yeah.
Hypothetical. Yeah.
Now, I'm also looking at the top 10 ADP as far as first baseman going into this season, and there are a lot of these guys that you could say are very much underperforming. Goldschmidt, Votto, who's really brought it up lately, but early season was really struggling. Anthony Rizzo has been just atrocious, and he attributes that to a bulky back because he slept on a bad mattress at a hotel one night in Cincinnati. So I don't know if I entirely buy that, but I think he'll get back up too. Cody Bellinger hasn't hit for like people expected. Edwin Encarnacion has struggled. Will Myers has been hurt. Eric Hosmer. I don't know what he's doing in the top 10 anyway. Miguel Cabrera, Matt Olson is in the 11th spot. So a lot of these guys are struggling. So I think it's super easy for him to get into the top 10 and finish there, I should say. And I really do think he does. I think he bounces back. I think he's too good of a talent not to bounce back. However, we're done with him as a first rounder, and I was kind of thinking Anthony Rizzo went with the 20th overall ADP this season. I don't know that I take Goldschmidt in the top 20 next year. It's all going to depend on how he finishes, but I think we're going to see a maybe not a steep decline, but we've already seen the decline, and now we're going to see the new level of talent, which is a 20 home run hitter, maybe 20 stolen base first baseman, which has its value, of course. But if the batting average, the OBP, the counting stats don't quite, you know, equal what we would like in this day and age of offense, I think his stock falls quite a bit.
Yeah, I think we're done with that tier of Paul Goldschmidt and then everybody else. He is kind of like everybody else now. If you look at the contact rate, 2016, it was 79%. Last year, it dipped down to 75%, and now he's all the way down to 71% this year. So those contact skills have been eroding, if you haven't been watching. And the stolen bases, granted, he hasn't been on base as much to steal, but, you know, those, you know, dipped down from 32 back to 18 last year, and now he's just 2 for 3 so far this year. We'll see if those pick back up, but, you know, the guy is going to be 31 pretty soon, and players don't start stealing more the older they get. So, yeah, top 10, sure, but he's more like a top 10 Jag, you know? Like, he's just kind of in that tier with those guys now, with those Rizzos, and who knows what's going on with Rhys Hoskins, man, is he slumping? But, you know, Freddie Freeman, I'd take him
over.
He's
a sophomore, and why were we expecting him to hit 70 home runs over this season?
Yeah, some people went crazy with that. I definitely, you know, he started off so good, and he's still walking a lot, but his contact rate has just plummeted, and that's what's surprising to me. So he's definitely got to make some adjustments.
He's no Brandon Belt.
Oh, that's for sure, the baby giraffe. So let's move on to our last segment here, and that is the glorious waiver wire. All right, so running a little long, as always, on this show. And just like last week, we're just going to have Ron and Van just take five here.
Oh, I see how it is. You suggested that we sit out and don't participate in the podcast anymore. How is it that you are so cruel as a host that you would suggest such a thing?
It was definitely my suggestion. Definitely my idea.
See, that's why he puts himself last in the order, because he wants people to feel sorry for him. So then that justifies him kicking us out for this segment, so he can talk the whole time with our guest.
I'm trying to hint to you guys that I don't want you on the show at all. But you guys still haven't been taking the hint.
Yeah.
So we're going to start off with Jesus Aguilar, Pat. He started slowly, but over the last... What's that?
One more time. Say his name again.
Jesus Aguilar.
Jesus Aguilar. Listen, Merv, you gotta come up here and you gotta see this kid in Milwaukee. Holy cow. You go see Bernie, he comes down to slide every time Aguilar hits a home run.
Fuck you, man. So, all right, so he's got four steals and a 375 average over the last week. What do you think about this guy?
Wait, four steals?
Wow, he's even better than I thought. He steals the bases, he hits the home run.
Yes, dear.
He's a machine.
My gosh, he does it all. He's the next. He's the next. Grand.
Hey, I told you guys to pipe down. Any interest in the aforementioned player, Pat, whose name I will never speak again on this show?
Yeah, I think Aguilar is the classic ride the streak guy. He's always been an intriguing prospect for fantasy purposes, because the power potential's always been there. He's made significant improvements this year. Fly balls are up, contact percentage is up, and the playing time is there now with Braun and Thames out. And that's really my only qualm with him going forward, is that he's not guaranteed an everyday role when everybody's healthy. But if he hits like he's hitting, there's the possibility. So you pick him up, you ride the streak, you take what you can get at this point, and you hope the playing time comes around. Because if it does, this is a guy that could be pretty special and pretty productive for fantasy teams in terms of producing, you know, 30 plus homer pop and, you know, an average that's going to be respectable right around 265, 270 in the middle of a great lineup.
Yeah, in a friendly ballpark. Mostly a short side platoon guy against lefties, but he does have a strikeout rate down below 23% against righties, and that's encouraging. So, yeah, what the hell, pick him up if you got room for him, if you need that bat. So Ross Stripling is going to be our next guy here. He's kind of bounced around between the pen and starting, but as a starter over 19 and one-thirds innings pitch, he's got a 3.26 ERA for the Dodgers, 23 strikeouts in just three walks. So you play in the stream game with Ross Stripling.
The numbers look really good with Stripling. The K per nine's over 10. He's got the low walk rate. He's avoiding damaging contact. He's throwing a bunch of pitches, too. His fastball is sitting right around 40%, and he's throwing four pitches, including that fastball, over 10%. So that's keeping hitters off balance. And it's good he's throwing the fastball 40% because it's not a particularly good pitch. The bad is the swinging strike rate doesn't support the K per nine. It's just sitting at 9%. And the velo boost that he got from the pen hasn't carried over. Hitters are making a lot of contact in the zone, so I suspect that this is just, you know, some fortunate luck along with plus control. And again, like Aguilar, that's enough that you can ride the streak. He's in a plus ballpark. He's in the NL. We've seen pitchers put together long stretches like this in those situations before, and it's possible that he can put it together, especially considering that the Dodgers rotation is decimated. Kershaw out, Hill out, Alex Wood is banged up. So Stripling has a pretty decent opportunity here to put together, you know, a good month to 6 weeks worth of work, and you might avoid the bad just based upon that. And, you know, like I said, there's always the possibility that he just puts it together for the full season. But sure, again, ride the streak.
Yeah, he's at least in streaming territory for me, but I think you are wise not to trust those gaudy overall numbers. So we'll move on to our next guy here, who is Mark Reynolds, the tried and true. He's got four bombs in seven games over the last week. So are we back riding the Mark Reynolds train, Pat?
You know, it's surprising that to me that he didn't get – you know, a real full-time offer in the off season, considering what he put together in Colorado. And maybe it's the Colorado bias, but he looked like a hitter to me that's made some pretty decent changes over the course of, you know, the last couple of seasons, in that he cut his strikeout rate down. He's right around 25%, and he's walking 10% of the time. He's a decent BABIP guy, so the average is going to float around 265, and the power has never really been in question. So it's a 25-30 homer bat, and maybe it was just the market was flooded with these guys, and that's why. And Reynolds is, of course, right-handed, so he's a short side platoon guy. But nonetheless, I mean, he's come out, he's torn the cover off the Boston. Zimmerman's been on the DL. But therein lies the problem, and it's similar to Aguilar, it's similar to Stripling. How long is it going to last? And particularly for Reynolds, he's a guy that's not – that they don't seem inclined to play against right-handed pitchers. I know today he sat for Matt Adams. So, you know, you're looking at a short side platoon guy. Yes, he can be productive in bursts, but I think he's confined to the deepest of leagues. Now, if he did find his way into more playing time, I think I would be a little more interested than you might think, more interested than most would be, because I think that there are some real changes here. Not only has he improved from the aspect of his K rate, but he's also now hitting more fly balls than he ever has before. Small sample, but you know, it's the only sample we have to go on.
Yeah, he's got to keep it up for a little bit longer before I believe there's any wholesale changes here. Otherwise, I think I'm probably just going to stick with Aguilar as far as, like, if I need a corner infield bat.
I'd rather have Aguilar, too.
Yeah. Brandon Crawford, the next guy on this list, he's hitting .435 over his last seven games with two bombs and a stolen base. What do you think? Are we seeing a resurgence here from a Brandon Crawford?
I mean, a resurgence back to
mediocrity from absolutely nothing.
Like back to the 20 homer, 5 or 6 steal, 265, 270 type bat. Yeah, it's possible. It's certainly he's always a player that's sort of passed the eye test for me, but the results have never been there. I've always felt like his swing is has a certain appeal to it that just doesn't seem to coordinate with the results. I like the fact that he's hitting the ball hard. He's got the line drive rate way up, and he's a high volume player. So, you know, in your deeper leagues, he's perfect because he's going to play every day. So you're going to get the counting stats as a result of that. He's hitting pretty much in the middle of that lineup. But I don't know that you can expect much more than high teens power and about a 265 average, even with the way he's playing right now.
Yeah. His ceiling is mediocrity in a deep league or your middle infielder in a 15-team league, but that's about it. His hard contact is up to 39% from 32% last year, but that's about it as far as his batter ball distribution and all that. So I'm not seeing any kind of huge difference here. So we'll move on to our last guy. It's Tyler O'Neill. He has three bombs over his last six games, and he's hitting .450. You know, Dexter Fowler, Marcelo Ozuna, they're all sucking. Ozuna apparently was benched today for tardiness. So is this Tyler's chance to weasel into some more playing time?
It's certainly an opportunity, but I hate to pour some cold water on this, but I looked at Tyler O'Neill today, and he looks a hell of a lot like Randall Grichuk in terms of you know, his skill set and what he does. You know, he has an outrageous hard contact rate. He's got a lot of swing and miss in his game. He doesn't have the walk rate. He can provide some speed on the base paths. Now, in bursts, that can be an explosive package, and it can be a player that can produce a lot of production in a very short period of time. And for that reason, he's worth an ad. But I don't know that he's going to be able to sustain himself and to sustain a role unless he makes some sort of change in terms of being able to take a walk or, you know, making more contact than he does. You know, I don't think Dexter Fowler is going away. I don't think Marcelo Ozuna is going away. Tommy Pham is awesome. He's not going anywhere. And Harrison Bader has been pretty good too. So I don't know that the playing time is going to be there for O'Neill. I have no issue with anybody picking him up and trying to ride the streak. But to me, I have a lot more faith in Aguilar than I do in O'Neill in terms of the profile. I think O'Neill might even be a little overhyped.
I don't have much to add to that. I pretty much am in lockstep with you with everything you said there. Although I am slightly more of a fan of his now that on Twitter he quote tweeted a tweet from RotoWare where they made a shirt for him that said, "You don't bench Tyler O'Neill, Tyler benches you." And because he's like just yoked, so it had like some weights on it, and he ordered a size large, so that was pretty fun. But otherwise, yeah, I'm still not too excited about the O'Neill. Seems like a guy who will be pretty streaky power wise, but perhaps ultimately disappointing. But some breaking news into the show before we wrap it up. Van, do we have a breaking news drop?
I can make one, so we've got one now.
Excellent. All right, breaking news: Wellington Castillo has been suspended 80 games. For performance-enhancing drugs, or at least, what is the report, a masking agent?
Probably that salt thing that Cano got hit for. It's something like that. It's not a steroid that he was busted for, but he's busted for a performance-enhancing drug.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking at the write-up now. It doesn't say the drug, but it does mention that, of course, Wellington Castillo will now not be eligible to play in the playoffs. For the White Sox.
Yeah, shoot.
So they were they were on pace to win that division. So that's a real shame for them. But, I mean, just that sucks because he was one of the few good catchers left not on the disabled list. And now you've got Omar Navarez catching for your White Sox. So fantastic. Good luck finding a catcher out there. Good Lord, it's ugly. So with that, anyway, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. Let's see, Pat, I mean, thanks so much for joining us, man. Just go ahead and plug everywhere that everybody can find you on there. Go ahead and let everybody know, you know, where they can find the work that you're putting out these days.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me on tonight. You can find me on the Fantasy World Order podcast, which is a part of the Fantrax podcast network. And you can find me on Twitter at PatrickFWO. And that's it. I'm really a lazy piece of so.
Welcome to the club, baby. All right. Thanks again for joining us, man. We'll see you guys next week. And until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.